Do you wish healthy didn't have to be hard? What if there was another way? Well, there is. And it's the Jade Walkaway, where healthy is delicious, easy and exciting, and doesn't have to mean saying no to chocolate and red wine. Welcome back to part two of my endo journey. In this episode, we'll be continuing on from my horror yoga class and what happened next. You'll also learn about the fertility challenges that I've faced, the frustration of being told time and time again that test results were normal until one day demanding to see the report and find that there actually was something that they hadn't told me. And of course, I will tell you the overwhelming sense of relief that occurred when I finally got the diagnosis I'd known all along. Enjoy this episode. I was in that much pain and I was just bawling my eyes out, like howling, and all I could do was open my car door and yell out to someone and tell them, can you please get me help? And someone said, yep, okay, I'll go inside right now. And they went outside. Next thing you know, I've got about five people wheeling out a hospital bed for me and helped me get out the car. So they got me into the hospital and, you know, I think they probably thought there was something really serious going on because I was in so much pain. And do you know what? There was something serious going on. But what's so deflating is that the moment you tell them it's really bad period pain, that it just all of a sudden, you know, just completely discredits everything you're going through in a way. And whilst, you know, they still gave me some painkillers and they could tell that I was extremely dehydrated as well, most likely from not only it being in the morning, sweating, and also having just lost all my bowel contents. I really need to get my fluids up, but they gave me some Panadol and some codeine, and the male doctor didn't really seem too fazed. And look, I get it. There's not really much they can do, but they need to be better trained in it. That's the thing, is that they just dismiss you like, oh God, she's just got period pain. When in fact, the pain that you have is worse than a broken arm. It's worse than, you know, so many trivial matters that go to hospital that may be seen to be more serious. And this pain was just like next level. Anyway, what was even worse, just as a little side joke, I was trying to call my husband from my hospital bed. And I couldn't get any service in the hospital. I tried to text him and it kept bouncing. And I was like, fuck, I'm not going to be able to get in contact with him. So I said to one of the nurses, I was like, can you please ring my husband and tell them? And they said, yeah, sure. So they said, what's his number? So I gave them my number and I thought, okay, sweet, he'll be aware. You know, hours kept going by, hadn't heard anything from him, still couldn't get through on my service. And then I sent him a text and it looked like it had gone through. And finally I got discharged, you know, the pain had started to subside with the painkillers and what have you. And I get home with, you know, my hospital band around me, feeling like deflated AF, walk in home and my husband's like, hey babe, how was your day? I was like, what do you mean? Like, did you not get the message? Did no one call you? And he's like, what are you talking about? I've just been in hospital. And he had no idea. And honestly, it actually reminds me of, I don't know if any of you guys watch Modern Family, but there was this episode where Phil Dunphy, being a real estate agent, he was doing an open inspection and he locked himself in the pantry and he ends up having to spend the night in there and he comes home the next day and he's like, it's all right, guys, I'm back. I'm okay. And they had no idea that he'd even gone because they didn't even notice. And it just, that honestly reminds me of that feeling when you just feel so deflated that no one even cared kind of thing. But anyway, so, you know, once again, I was just feeling so deflated by my body that no one could help me. And I just didn't know what else to do. So, you know, as I started to go through my degree and getting a bit more knowledge and certainly feeling fairly convinced that I had endo, reading up that it wasn't uncommon for women to have their endometriosis missed, I was like, okay, at some point I'm going to just, you know, buy the bullet and go see a practitioner, you know, someone who specializes in endo and just, you know, start this process. So I was at the time working at a clinic with a naturopath who, sorry to backtrack, basically the last year of my degree, I started working in a clinic in admin, hoping, you know, that that would be a stepping stone for me to be able to practice there, which it was. And that was the first like major clinic that I worked in. And there was an awesome naturopath there who specialized in women's health and hormones and fertility. And she also had really, really bad endometriosis. She was told that she would never be able to have children. And she now has two boys, I believe. And so that's, you know, very similar to my story. You know, that's her life mission. You know, she helps so many other women. So I had a consult with her and told her about, you know, everything that was going on. And I remember having a little breakdown and saying, you know, like, it's just really hard because no one understands or no one listens. And I just feel so defeated because this is something I've been going on, you know, essentially for at that time, it was like 15, 16 years. So she put me on a whole barrage of things to really get started with, like reducing the pain, reducing the inflammation and so on. But what she did say was, because at that time my husband and I were considering starting to try for a baby, and this was about 2 years ago, and I said, you know, I'm feeling a little bit lost and confused because I'm not sure, should I start trying for a baby now, or is it better that I get on top of the endo first and have surgery first? And she said, look, a lot of women who have endo can fall pregnant, especially with all the naturopathic work. And on top of that, we know that pregnancy can quite often be quite good for endo. Now, not all cases, let me just put that out there, but in a lot of cases, it is really good for endo and can reduce the pain significantly. Again, for some people, it's the opposite, but the general consensus is that. So that's when I thought, okay, you know what, maybe we should just start trying because that's the better option to do that before going invasive. And I also saw the integrated GP there and he also agreed, you know, yeah, I think that would be probably a good idea to see if you can fall pregnant, because everything else, like I had regular cycles, I didn't have pain in between my periods, and whereas a lot of endo girls do. And I'd also had, this is the other thing I forgot to mention, was I'd also had several ultrasounds. Always tell you they're fine, they're normal. But I had had a transvaginal ultrasound, which is, so I mean, I'd had several transvaginal ultrasounds before, but this particular technique has been shown to pick up some forms of endo. But the person doing it has to be trained in being able to pick up the endo. So that was like a $400 ultrasound that I once got while I was in my last year of my degree, and they said everything looked normal. And, you know, that was a good sign in terms of the fact that my bowel looked movable. There was nothing that they could really pick up on the ultrasound. But of course, we know that you can't pick up all forms, if not most forms of endo on just your general ultrasound. So anyway, so that was kind of the point that I was at, that I was thinking, okay, let's give it a crack with trying to fall pregnant first and see how we go. And the GP did also give me a referral to one of the private gynos that specialized in endo. I never ended up doing it because it, you know, it was quite expensive and just, I couldn't justify that expense. But at the same time, I was thinking, you know what? No, I'm just, let's try for a baby. But we then decided that we would hold off trying for a baby, just for, you know, a few different reasons, had other things that we wanted to do first. And so we held off, but then I just kind of put the idea of the endo to the side a little bit because, you know, I was just so used to it. I was just so used to having to pop Naprogesics every single month, and, you know, knowing how to best manage my pain, that I just, you know, become part of my life, and you kind of almost forget that you need to be doing something about it. So then I think really what piqued my, there were two things that piqued my interest to start reinvestigating again. And that was when I did start to practice and I started to see a lot of women with either endo or most likely undiagnosed endo. And I started to become extremely passionate because of my own story on encouraging women to get investigated for endo. But what was frustrating for me is every time I did this, I'm like, Jade, why aren't you taking your own advice? And I felt really defeated by that quite often, to be honest, because I was always helping women get diagnosed with endo and helping them with their endo. But meanwhile, I was still suffering. And I also felt like a little bit of a failure as well, because I was like, why haven't I been able to help my own when I can help so many other women? And do you know what? Speak to a lot of practitioners and they'll all tell you the same thing. Like, to be in this kind of profession, you often put other people before you and you often deflect your own conditions by helping other people. And it's a bit of a strange phenomenon, but it's very common. And it's also why we always say, don't help yourself see another practitioner. Like, no matter whether that you're a naturopath, a GP, a psychologist, they all say see another practitioner. Don't try and help yourself, because there's too many reasons that you know you're gonna fuck it up, because you can't think clearly when it's yourself. So basically, you know, fast track to only a few months ago, where I finally got the answers that I'd been looking for. So this started because last year, my husband and I, we did finally decide that we wanted to try for a baby. And this is when we went to Greece last year in August/September. And we decided, you know what, that'll be our last big hurrah. And then let's have a baby after that. There'd been several times where we were like, let's try for a baby now. And then something else would come up. And this was finally the time that we were going to do it. Everything was, you know, as far as I was aware, was set up, ready to go. And, you know, I'd been doing all the prenatal stuff, naturopathically speaking, and taking all the prenatal vitamins and so on. And literally that month, when we got back from Greece, I was so excited, hoping that, oh my God, you know, could I have fallen pregnant straight away? And I know for a lot of women, they always say, look, it often doesn't happen straight away, which is totally true. However, being a naturopath, we know what needs to be in place to be able to fall pregnant pretty much instantly. And when all those things are in place, generally it can happen quite soon. And I've had clients that have fallen pregnant literally first go when everything's in place. So I was so adamant that that would be the case for me. And I remember coming back and I actually thought I was pregnant, because I was having what I thought were implantation pains. And then I also got some spotting, and this was about 4 days before my period was due. And you can get, when you're pregnant, you can get implantation spotting, which is a sign that you might be pregnant. And I was like, oh my God, I actually think I'm pregnant. And do you know what? I was so excited by it that I actually couldn't wait. And I called my mom and I was like, look, I don't know for sure, but I reckon I might be pregnant because I'm getting all these signs. And anyway, but then basically later that day, or it might have been the next day, I was very disappointed to find that I actually was getting my period. And not only that, my period was 4 days early and it was really painful and uncomfortable. And I was like, what the hell's happened here? Like, everything was so good. And, you know, long story short, I was like, you know, I need to get this investigated, because if I want to fall pregnant, I can't be having this. And I think on reflection, you know, I had, you know, going on holidays, you know, we'd done so much, I'd eaten a lot of dairy, which is no good for your hormones. And I had more alcohol than usual, to be honest. Like, I barely drink alcohol at all anymore. I hadn't been drinking at all pretty much in the few months leading up to that. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was having a wine here, a wine there, and just, I guess it all adds up, and it really did take its toll on my period, and it was just out of whack. So I went to the doctor and I said, I want to get some investigations done, and I really want an ultrasound. And he was a really lovely doctor. I really liked him. He was super on board with anything I wanted to do. And he was like, you know, I think it's just a rogue period, you know, probably just a bit of stress, perhaps maybe just coming back from the holiday, the jet lag, all of that stuff can affect your period, which is so true. And he's like, look, I'll write your referral for an ultrasound, but to be honest, you'll probably just throw it in the bin. But here it is anyway. And I said to him, do you know what? No, I am actually going to get this ultrasound because I've been wanting to check on some other things. Because some other things that had been going on in the lead up to that as well was for a long time, I had always had really bad ovulatory pain, which is also another classic sign of endometriosis. So some people call it ice pick pain. And it's truly when the follicle is, the egg is being released, it can cause a little bit of discomfort for some women. Sometimes it's quite mild and it's normal, but if it's quite painful, then that can often be a sign of endo. And that was absolutely the case for me. And sometimes it would be really, really uncomfortable and last a while. And sometimes that can also be perhaps like some rogue cysts and all sorts. So I was like, you know what? I haven't had an ultrasound for a year now, which, you know, isn't that long to be honest, but I thought I'll get it checked out. And this was what kind of opened the door for me to really want to start doing some more investigations, because in that ultrasound, it was probably the most thorough ultrasound I've ever had. And anyone who's had an ultrasound knows how uncomfortable it is when you have to hold onto your bladder because you have to drink gallons of water. You cannot go to the toilet because that's what actually helps them to be able to see what's going on. And so I had this guy, and I think he must have been in training, the radiologist, and he was really lovely doing the ultrasound. And I could tell that he could see something that, you know, just wasn't the usual, not saying whether it was normal or not, but it just didn't seem quite right. And he went in and got one of the more experienced radiologists, and they kept looking around, and oh my God, I tell you what, it was the most painful bladder hold I'd ever had, because they just kept wanting to see more and more and more, because they could see this dark shadow like on the screen, which, you know, when you've seen an ultrasound, it's very ambiguous to an untrained eye from someone like myself who wouldn't have a clue what the hell a dark shadow that looked like that could be. But anyway, they kept asking me, they're like, have you ever been told that you've got a fibroid before? I was like, nope. And they're like, are you sure? And they kept coming back to me, they're like, so have you had an ultrasound before? Yep, had several of them. And you've never been told you've got a fibroid? Nope, definitely not. And they're kind of like, they're both doing the ultrasound, looking at the screen, having little words with each other, like, oh yeah, you can see this here, and oh yeah, there's that Venetian blind effect, yeah. And they're like, oh, don't worry, we're just talking shop here. And I'm like, I understand what you're saying. And so, of course, after that, I went home and just started researching the shit out of everything that I'd heard them say to figure out what they've potentially found. Particularly what piqued my interest was this Venetian blind effect, which is highly indicated highly indicative of either adenomyosis or fibroids. And I was pretty emotional because I was like, okay, so I've either got adeno or fibroids, and you know, no one's told me. And I really wanted to know more. I wanted more answers, and I just could not wait for the proper report to come back. And I was going to have to wait a couple of days for that report anyway. So I gave it a good solid few days and went to my GP, and he was looking for the report, and he's like, no, it's not there. Now, this was a bulk billing clinic, and I didn't get the same GP. And this guy was like, I swear, he was about 80 years old. I think he needed to retire. But anyway, he was like, nah, the report's not there. I'll call radiology because this isn't normal. It should definitely be back by now. So he called radiology, and they're like, oh, yep, we're still writing the report. And he's like, well, I've got the patient sitting in here in front of me, and I think she would just like to know, you know, if everything's okay. So they, you know, waiting around, they put them onto a radiologist so they can just have a look at it. And they're like, look, just had a look. Everything is more or less fine.
and nothing to worry about. So he gets off the phone. He's like, yeah, no, everything's normal, should be fine. I was like, well, that's funny, because they were definitely looking like they had found something, you know, that there was something on there that they kept looking at for a long time. And, you know, they spent ages trying to locate it. And, you know, they even wanted to look at my kidneys and my spleen, like just to check everything else. And anyway, and he's like, well, they'd tell you if something wasn't okay, so should be fine. And I just wasn't having that. I was so pissed. I walked out of there frustrated as hell. And I did a video on my Instagram straight away, as I always do. And, you know, even had a little emotional breakdown, because I was like, why is it so hard for me to get answers for what's wrong with me? You know, it was just, I just felt like it was brick wall after brick wall. And that became my norm. I was so frustrated. So, and then I remembered, you know, not the knowledge of knowing that even though sometimes GPs say that you can't, they can't give you out your blood test before having an appointment, it's actually part of the, what's it called, the Freedom of Information Act, that you can request them. And so knowing what I knew, I thought, you know what, I'm going to call up the radiology place and just see if I can come in and pick up the report. So first of all, I wanted to know if it was ready yet. So I called up and they said, yep, it's ready. And to be honest, the girl on the phone was rather patronizing. And she was like, I don't know why you were told it wasn't ready yet, because it should have definitely been ready at that point, because it's definitely here. And I was like, well, no, I was just at the doctor's this morning and he had to speak to someone about it. And she's like, yeah, well, it's definitely here. And she's like, well, we'll send that to your GP and you can make an appointment and go see them. And I was like, well, no, I'm not going to go wait there for an hour to see another GP just to get this report. And she's like, well, sorry, but you have to. And I was like, well, no, I actually do have a right to go and get that report. And then she just kind of froze and she's like, she was a bit pissed off about it, I think. And so she said, well, bring a form of ID and you can pick it up. So I went in there just before the end of the day, and she acted as if she didn't know who I was. And she's like, hi, can I help you? And it was just really, just the whole service of it was just really poor. So anyway, I said, yep, I'm here to pick up my results. And she's like, oh, okay, we'll send that over to your GP now. And I was like, no, can I get a printout of that report? And she said, no, you can't. I was like, well, someone on the phone told me that I can. She's like, well, you can't. You're going to have to go to GP and that's final, basically. So, and that radiology place was right next door to my GP. And I thought, okay, I just felt so defeated. I just wanted to cry. I was like, I feel like I'm just never going to get anywhere. And I went to walk to my car and I thought, all right, just one last go for what it's worth. I'm just going to go into the GP, see if anyone's still available. Cause this was like 5:30 by this point. And I walked in there like, unfortunately, we're not taking any more bookings. And I'm like, okay, yep. Went to walk out, you know, feeling defeated. And I thought, hang on a sec, turn back around. Just ask if they can print off that report. So I went in, I was like, hey, just sort of check. The radiologist has just sent over my report. I already had a consult with my GP this morning. Can I just get a print off? And she's like, yep, no worries. And I swear the heavens just opened up and there were angels singing, because I just couldn't believe I finally got my way in a circumstance. And anyway, so I got that report and I basically skipped to my car and I could not wait to read it. And sure enough, it said that they had found a 4.5 centimeter pedunculated fibroid. And what pedunculated means is basically it's attached to a stem, and it was also subcutaneous. So it was on top of the uterus, but not inside the uterus. But I thought, fuck, if I hadn't gone in there and demanded to get that report, I would have never known that I had this fibroid. And it got me thinking, have I always had this fibroid and no one told me because it's just considered normal? Because it is true that I think it's something like 70 to 80% of women will start to develop fibroids when they start to head into like that 30s age bracket. And so I was quite pissed at by this point, because I was like, okay, you know, regardless of whether it's normal or not, and regardless of whether it does impact me, I have a right to be told that there is something there that, you know, shouldn't really be there. And as a naturopath, this is something that we want to know, because it's often an indicator of high estrogen and other things that could be going on, such as endocrine disrupting chemicals, your genetics, and so on. So this is really important for me to know that. And likewise, I would want to know that about my clients as well. Do they have fibroids? Because that's going to tell me something that's happening. Did you know this month is Endometriosis Awareness Month? If you follow me on Instagram, you'll know I've been extra active this month, sharing information and Instagram lives on the different topics around endo. One of the biggest misconceptions that I am deeply passionate about is teaching women that period pain is not normal, period. Any woman who needs to take time off work, school, or take painkillers needs to be investigated for conditions such as endometriosis. The one thing that women also don't realize is that you don't need to suffer forever. Once you use specific nutrients and herbs to reduce the inflammation which drives period pain, you can stop this from happening. In order to help you get this information, I've actually collaborated with a fellow naturopath, Kate Harrison from Little Yarrow this month, who also suffered from endo. And we've collaborated to bring you a very special package which includes everything every woman must know about endo and to significantly reduce your symptoms with easy dietary and lifestyle strategies that you can start implementing straight away. This bundle includes my extensive endometriosis handbook, which I actually only usually give to paying clients. It includes Kate's Endo Solution audio that talks about her story and the key things that helped her and many other clients go into remission. And an extra bonus I've also thrown in, my 9 fundamentals to optimal well-being, which is everything I tell my clients. This bundle is usually worth over $97. However, for Endo Awareness Month, we're offering this bundle for just $47. To get yours, head to endobundle.jadewalkerhealth.com. But hurry, because the offer ends 31st March. So that was the turning point for me. That was really the point that set me on this path of A, wanting to find out more answers, B, wanting to help other people, and that becoming my real deep passion, and really was what led me on the path to getting my diagnosis of endo. So from that point forward, I just started diving right deep into all the research on fibroids and so on, and to the point where, to be honest, I wasn't even sleeping, because I was just so fixated on it, and I just wanted to find out, why the hell wouldn't they tell me this? And, you know, like I said, I do understand that it is considered normal, because it's kind of that old saying, like, just because it's common doesn't mean it's normal. And that's absolutely the case in this situation, because fibroids are common. And yes, they may not impact your fertility, but in fact, they can. So after that, I realized I wasn't going to be falling pregnant as well, because, you know, we tried a few times, and it also started to make sense to me why there'd been times when, you know, we'd accidentally slipped up when I was ovulating and I still hadn't fallen pregnant. I always wondered why, and, you know, all those kind of things. And so I was like, maybe I need to reinvestigate. Maybe I need to reopen these doors in endo. And I happened to come across this Facebook group for support for women with endometriosis in Australia. And just a caveat, quick caveat though, obviously Facebook groups can sometimes also be the worst places to go for your condition, but fortunately, having the insight already, do like I was, you know, I knew what to be looking out for. But I joined this group, and for the most part, it was actually the best thing that I did, because within that page, I discovered that there actually are these advanced trained excision surgeons that are public. And that was the first best news for me in a long time, because I finally felt like there was hope for me to be able to get this, the actual, you know, the laparoscopy that I needed, and hopefully the surgery if required as well. So the next thing for me that I set out to find was a surgeon that is available in private near me. And within this page, you can search for just about anything you want. And sure enough, I was able to find some surgeons in my area. And that is when I discovered Dr. Russell Dalton. And so the common thing with public and getting a laparoscopy in the public system to see an advanced trained excision surgeon, not ablation, is that there's a really long wait time. So, for example, if you're with private, it can be, you know, a month or even like 3 months max. With that said, you're out of pocket anywhere from $2,000 to $15,000 on top of your private health. Not even kidding. This is really common knowledge. Whereas if you go public with some of the really well-known advanced excision surgeons in Melbourne, you can be waiting for over 12 months up to 18 months. And that was just something that I was prepared to do. And then if I fell pregnant in the meantime, then great, so be it. But then I happened to read a post about Dr. Russell Dalton, who's actually based out of Ballarat, and he has been working in endo and fertility for a really, really long time. And he even trains other surgeons in excision surgery. And I had heard really, really good things about him and read really good things about him. And not only that, because he was more regional, his wait list was a lot shorter. And some people were saying, you know, like wait list might be only 5 months or something like that. And I was like, sweet, I will locate him. So I found him. And even better was that I was prepared to drive to Ballarat to see him. And they said, where are you? Geelong. Oh, he visits Geelong once a month. And I was like, you're kidding. That's amazing. And finally, for once in my life, I felt like I was actually on the right path and people were finally listening to me. These brick walls were coming down and I was finally just feeling positive about everything. So I got in to see him within about a month. I think the wait time was around about a month, just because obviously, you know, Geelong, he didn't come there as often. And then I went to see him and he does transvaginal ultrasounds as well. But because he is so well trained in finding it, there's a much better chance that he is actually going to see the endo. Even then, though, because I had gone through so many years of having had so many ultrasounds and being told everything's normal, I genuinely just expected him to give me that same answer. So literally within 5 minutes, I'm on the table, pants off, and a little camera scope thingo up my vagina. And I was laying there and straight away before that, stuck his finger up my vagina to have a feel around, and he could feel that, you know, he's like, everything feels fairly normal. The left side does feel a little bit hitched up. And then that's when he, after that, went in with the ultrasound, and straight away he's like, yep, I can see that there's a little bit of thickening there. If you can see on the screen here, see that white color, it's a little bit thickened. It looks like you've probably got some endo just on the left uterosacral ligament there, and just a little bit on your right as well. And it was just so normal. And the way that he said it was just so matter of fact. And meanwhile, him not knowing that it's taken me 18 years since getting my period for someone to actually tell me that. And I'll never forget laying there on my back with my legs spread, him with his scope up there, looking around my uterus, and I just will never forget this tear just rolling out my right eye and hitting my pillow, and just this sense of overwhelm hit me because finally I had the answers that I'd been looking for so long. And it was just the most intense feeling, and I was trying not to let it overwhelm me too much. I didn't want to just start breaking down in tears right there in front of him. But then we got up, went back and sat down at the chair for him to just, you know, talk about what we're going to do next. And it was just so instant. It was just like, yep, yeah, okay. So, and he had like a diagram that he gives everyone of the uterus and, you know, writes on there where the potential endo is. And he also mentioned that he could see a large cyst, what he thought was on my ovaries. And this is the thing, pedunculated fibroids move around a bit because they're attached to a stalk. So it obviously looked like it was on the ovary at that point. And he's like, and we'll cut that off as well. And like, just within moments, we're talking about my surgery. And I actually just broke down and started crying. And I was just like, I've never had someone finally confirm that I have endo. I'm trying not to cry right now because I just remember that overwhelming feeling of someone finally listening to me. And he was just the most beautiful, nurturing person. And he just kept saying, you know, you poor girl, like to have gone through this long of no one listening or being told that everything's fine when it's not. And this, he was just like an angel to me to finally have it. And on top of that, what was even more exceptional, because I said, okay, so when can we do this surgery? I was just so eager. And the most amazing thing was that it was within 4 weeks' time that we could get in for the surgery. And I just, oh gosh, I was so elated. And I remember being frustrated though that I had consults and a podcast, two podcast interviews booked in for that day. All I wanted to do was just go home and relish in this new knowledge and this feeling of excitement and positivity. And I within like 20 minutes, I had to be home for my first consult. And I just wanted to go home, cry it out, be happy, ring mom, ring my husband, you know. But I had to, like, you know, hold myself together for my clients. So anyway, that was one of the best days when it comes to my endo. And I joke that I was the happiest person with endo. So come the surgery, I went to the Maryborough Hospital, which is this small hospital. And I must admit, I was actually quite, I was a little bit concerned. I was like, oh gosh, like it's a really small hospital. Is everything going to be great? And oh my gosh, the service was just absolutely next level, just such beautiful support, because they were doing these laparoscopies round the clock. Just, they were doing them all day with these girls with endo. And, you know, even then, even though he had found the endo on the transvaginal ultrasound, you know, knowing that you can't always pick up all forms of endo on an ultrasound, and knowing that, you know, it's a little bit ambiguous still, there was still this part of me that didn't believe it. And there was still this part of me that was really worried that I was going to wake up after surgery and be told that, look, there actually isn't any endo. And I was really worried that I was going to have to backtrack and tell everyone that I jumped the gun, and because I'd already announced this on Instagram and so on. And I was really, really worried about that, because I'd gone through my life being constantly told that everything was normal. And yeah, it was just, that was my biggest concern. Anyway, though, I, much to my delight, I woke up drugged up as fuck, in a lot of pain. But pretty instantly, one of the nurses came over to my bedside and showed me some photos that they took from the laparoscopy. And they circled where the endo was, and it was on that left uterosacral ligament that they cut out. And what's interesting about this is, because there's all different types of endo, and I promise you that I'm going to do a podcast, if not, I'm going to do plenty more podcasts on endo, but we're going to talk a bit more about the types of endo and that kind of thing. But with endo, there's all different types of endo. And to an untrained eye, if you were to look at my uterosacral ligament, you would not know that there was anything wrong with it. But obviously he could see that there was the endo there, and he cut that out. But also he found that pedunculated fibroid and cut that out, and it was huge. Like, it honestly almost looked like the width of my uterus. And then on my right-hand side, there were a lot of adhesions. And this is something that I've suspected for a really long time, because, and now these weren't endo adhesions. This was actually surgical adhesions from when I had my appendix out when I was 15 or 16. And I always suspected I had these adhesions because, one, I always felt this pulling feeling on that lower right quadrant. It always felt like something was pulling kind of on my bowels a little bit. And also, that's highly linked with SIBO and as many of you know from Instagram, this is something I'm also very passionate about, because if there are adhesions around the ileocecal valve, which is around where the appendix is, then that can cause SIBO. And I'll talk about that in another podcast soon as well. So that was such good confirmation for me. And I just, you know, I knew that I've been right all along. Like, I knew that I had endo. I knew that I had these adhesions. And finally, someone was listening to me and doing something about it. And sure enough, I actually just had my first post-surgery follow-up with Russell yesterday. And yeah, he confirmed obviously everything I've just said, and he said, yeah, there were a lot of adhesions there that were pulling up on the cecum as well. So basically that can also impact your digestive health. And I've had gut issues for a really long time, and this was just all making so much sense to me, and it was just such a breath of fresh air. So the other thing that he said as well is that even though the fibroid is on top of the uterus, he said that that could actually still impact your fertility as well, because fibroids also do release a particular chemical that may impair your fertility. But on top of that, of course, the endo itself is, you know, one of the bigger, more so reasons. And the reason why with endo, I mean, for some women, it's the structural component, but it's actually because of the inflammation. And it's basically like releasing these chemicals that can impair adhesion. It can attack the sperm, it can also attack the follicle, and so on. So there, you know, it's really working against you. So he feels pretty confident now that I should be able to fall pregnant. Everything else is in place, and of course I'm doing all the naturopathic things. So I'm really looking forward to the next few months of trying to conceive, and I'll absolutely be sharing that next adventure with you guys. So in the next episode though, as part of this little series on my endo journey, I'm going to be talking about what I do now and what's really important with endo management and prevention of it growing back, because what a lot of women don't realize is that there is a lot of action that you need to be taking to work on that. And there's a lot of things that you can do as well. I'll also talk about some things that I found that helped me with the surgery process and post-op support, and a lot more. So I look forward to seeing you then. Thank you so much for sticking around and listening to my very personal story on my endo journey. I really hope that I can help other women and help them understand that what they might be going through isn't normal. So if you do think that this could help just one person, please feel free to share this episode, take a screenshot of this on iTunes or Spotify and post it onto Instagram, tag me, I always reshare. And of course, if you can, please give me 5 stars and write a little review and hit subscribe, because that's what helps this podcast get out to more people and also helps me stay motivated as well. Also, if you'd like to work with me and start getting on top of your endometriosis or any hormonal or health-related conditions, I would love to help you. I see clients from all over not only Australia, but now also overseas as well, thanks to technology allowing us to do video consults and also online prescribing software. So if you'd like to find out more, please head to jadewalker.com.au and you'll be able to book through the link, and it will have all the information you need. I would love to help you.